good afternoon. So last time we talked about a bunch of alternatives to using threads. We mentioned that, you know, if you were using threads because you thought, oh, I need to read from multiple files at once, file descriptors at once, how do I do that without having multiple threads calling read? There are interfaces where we have a system call that will tell you, hey, this is the file descriptor you should read from next, giving you what we call an event. And you write in a loop that handles those events, and you could have one thread handle all these file descriptors together. So for example, if you were making a web server, you could have one thread handle multiple web clients that are all talking to you via file descriptors. And we also said that, well, you could have one big task be computed cooperatively by multiple processes that don't need to share memory using this message passing model, that we send messages between the processes rather than having the actual data they're computing on being shared. So when they want to share something, they send a message rather than reading from something another thread wrote. And both of these allow you to do many of the things you'd want to accomplish with threads without them and without needing to worry nearly as much about things like deadlock or blocking or race conditions as a result. So then we looked at virtual memory. So this was how we would allow the operating system to establish a mapping from the addresses the program used to real addresses, and this allowed isolation, so we could have two programs that couldn't access each other's memory and could have different values at the same address, so we could give the programs their preferred layout. And we talked about the most common scheme for doing this, known as virtual memory, which is focused on this idea of splitting up memory, both the virtual memory that the program thinks it's using and the physical memory that that gets mapped to, into these fixed size units called pages. And then to manage that, we have a table saying for each virtual page, what is the physical page number, and also some metadata. Like we could say, hey, when the program accesses this page, it should only be able to read, not write. And we put these in an array, basically, which we called a page table. And we looked at that structure and realized that, well, that works. It's a nice solution to our problem, and this is something the hardware can deal with, but it's pretty expensive for the sort of size of memory we want, like even with just 32-bit address space, like x86 has, it seems like we need many megabytes to store this for every process, and that quickly becomes unwieldy. So we had a more efficient data structure where we'd use the same page table idea. We'd have these arrays of physical page number and metadata, but we'd have two levels of them. And we'd split up the virtual page number that we previously used to look up in our flat table as just the index into two pieces. We use the first piece in the first level to look up the next page table. So we'd have several second level page tables and one master first level page table for each process that points to those second level page tables. And this would save space because sometimes we wouldn't need a second level page table for a range of addresses. And in that case, we just store a page table entry saying, hey, there's nothing here. After looking at that structure and how we navigated that structure, how we figured out where things were, we started looking at what the memory layout that XV6 uses. And we mentioned that XV6 has this idea where all the application stuff, the stuff that's different between processes, is going to be in the bottom half of memory. And we have this top half, which is used by the kernel, which we map always the same. And in this way, which is very consistent with physical memory. And we're going to see that that's really useful for the code in XV6 that needs to create page tables and manipulate page tables so we can give processes the memory they expect while still having the kernel be able to easily deal with those physical addresses that the processor understands, even though the kernel runs with virtual memory enabled. That means that when the kernel accesses an address, it uses a page table. It has to use virtual addresses. It can't just directly access a physical address. So questions about what we covered last time? So last time we were looking at this sort of mapping. So mentioned that we have this kernel part of memory, and there's some division point, which is halfway between memory, and everything in this blue region is going to be set in the page tables with a metadata bit saying, hey, only let this allow be accessed in kernel mode. Meaning that when the processor looks at the page table, and if a program tries to use that blue region and it's running in user mode, it's going to trigger an exception. We're going to kill the program. So this is how we ensure that even though we have a mapping for all the addresses, and that means that the kernel, when we're running in kernel mode, can read and write any program's memory via that blue region, none of the other programs running can do that and access other programs' data. That's important for protecting programs from each other. This also means that we have this since we have this static mapping that we said address at this boundary is at physical page 0, then 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, and that's just how we set up the page tables when we start a process in that boot, that means that because we allocate programs pages, that we're going to have two mappings for most of the addresses programs are using. We're going to have the one for the program to use and one for the kernel to use that the kernel can easily compute based on the physical address. Okay. So questions about this mapping? So the reason to have this mapping, partly, is that we choose the layout for the green part, the part programs expect, based on how programs are built. And as an operating system designer, we want to just provide whatever layout is useful to the programs. We don't want to dictate that based on how we built our OS internally. But for the kernel stuff, we want easy access to all memory because it's going to be convenient if our system calls can access whatever memory they need, and this is one convenient design for doing that. That we don't have to do anything special to access any particular part of physical memory. And having this one-to-one mapping in the kernel region means that we can easily take a physical address and convert it to a virtual address that we can use. It's not going to be necessarily the virtual address a program would use, but it's going to be one that lets us in the kernel access some particular part of physical memory. So this means, for example, if I read the program's page table and want to figure out what's at that location the page table points to, I can easily read the physical address from the page table and access that memory, even if it's not the currently active page table. And that's going to be useful when we want to set up a page table. Now we can easily look at a partially set up page table and add things to it or remove things and know what's going on and access that memory. So, showed you sort of the overall layout. Let's talk about how XV6 is chosen to lay out the memory of each program. And there are some things about this you might find a bit different. So we have at the bottom here, the area labeled text. This is where the code is. Text is just a bad old name for the code area of memory. We have data. This is where globals, and constants are, generally. Then we have this thing called the guard page. I'll get to that later. And we have the stack. You may be used to from how Linux or Windows works, the stack being above the heap. XV6 has made a different decision, so the stack is below the heap. So we have our initial stack pointer at the highest address of the stack, and the stack grows towards lower addresses. And XV6 has chosen that the stack that we give to programs is always one page, that's 4 kilobytes. If you want more, well, too bad. And below the stack is this guard page. So the guard page is a page that, if we keep using stack space, it's probably where we'd access next. If we keep pushing onto the stack and we run out of room, we'll go into the guard page next. And the idea of the guard page is to detect when we do this. So the guard page is set in the page table as not user accessible. So that's a part of the green user part of memory that's just marked as not user accessible. And the reason for doing this is so if a program overflows its stack, probably it will trigger the exception from trying to access non-user accessible memory. And we'll catch that rather than going into its global variables and modifying those, which would be a lot harder to debug. And this is a very common tactic you'll see in more featureful OSs, that they'll put these guard pages around important memory regions to catch overflow and underflow from programs. Now, this isn't 100% reliable because it assumes we, you know, don't skip ahead, like try to allocate like four pages on the stack. If we do that, well, we're going into the globals. Sorry, that's what's happening. Okay, some questions about anything in this layout here? So we're going to look at how XV6 sets up page tables. And to talk about that, I'm going to talk about some conventions XV6 uses for manipulating addresses and then manipulating page tables. And XV6 has this convention that they, in their code, store virtual addresses in pointers and physical addresses in integers. There's no requirement to do this. You can stick a virtual address in an integer. You can stick a physical address in a pointer. Like, that works perfectly fine in C, but they have chosen as convention and as sort of a way of documenting their code that when they mean a virtual address, they'll store it in a pointer type. When they mean a physical address, they'll store it in an integer type. And this is so to help, you know, prevent errors when people are writing code with mixing up the two types. And XV6 has some functions, which sometimes macros, for converting between virtual and physical addresses. And you'll see this a bunch in XV6's code for manipulating page tables, and you might use them a bunch in some upcoming assignments. So there's VTP for virtual to physical and physical to virtual. And these are all based on that one-to-one mapping. So VTP converts a kernel address that you can access from the kernel as just a normal pointer into a physical address by subtracting the beginning of the kernel region, that constant kern base where that blue region of memory begins. So it requires a kernel address. If you wanted to convert a user address, one that we allocated to the user, we don't have such a simple mapping. Remember, we just allocate different parts of memory to the user. It's not one-to-one. You can still do this translation, but VTP doesn't do it. You have to do a page table lookup, and we'll talk about what utility functions XV6 provides for that later. But this is just for kernel addresses. It's really fast because of that one-to-one mapping and convenient, but you know, it doesn't work for user addresses. And we also have the reverse mapping. So if we have a physical address, the P to V will convert it to a virtual address. A kernel virtual address. If it's also mapped for the user to use, P2V is not going to find it. If you wanted to figure that out, you'd have to like iterate through the entire page table to find out where did we use this address. And that would be really slow. That's not what P2V does. P2V finds the one we can find quickly just by adding that constant. Some questions on these two functions and/or macros? So that's on accessing addresses. We also need to access page table entries. And on 32-bit x86, page table entries are 32 bits. And XV6 has two types to represent page table entries. One for first level page table entries called PDET, PDE for page directory entry. And one for second level page table entries called PTET for page table entry. These are both just aliases for unsigned int. So the only reason XV6 really has these types, rather than just using unsigned, is to help document the code that uses them. Like, there's nothing that actually requires using this instead of unsigned int. And these 32-bit integers are somehow going to encode both our physical page number and our metadata, and I'll show the scheme that x86 has chosen for that in a bit. And our page tables overall are going to be arrays of these entries. So they're arrays of 1,024 of them. So to access that array, we'll get a pointer to a page table entry or page directory entry that's the base of the array and access it in C just like an array, because it's really an array of 32-bit values. You have a 32-bit type pointing to it. You can access it like an array. So questions about these types? So let's look at what is in a page table entry. So this is a figure from the Intel manuals for the virtual memory scheme that XV6 uses. And it has three parts here. So at the top, it tells you what the layout of the page table base register is. So the page table base register is the pointer that's in a special register to the first level page table. And it contains the address of the page directory. And by address on this figure, what Intel means is the page number. It's an address in pages, not in bytes. And it's the physical page number, not the virtual one. It can't be the virtual one because where would we do the lookup? And this is in the page table base register, which Intel inconveniently calls CR3 for control register 3. Some great naming. You'll notice that there's also some other stuff over here in the page table base register. In XV6, this is just always going to be set to 0. We also have first level page table entries, and there are three different versions of this. XV6 never uses the first version, so we won't talk about it. So the other two versions are if the page table entry is valid, which Intel calls present, then this valid bit here is set to 1, in which case we have the address of the second level table. And this is, again, a page number, a physical page number. That's the type of address we're going to have here. And we also have some metadata bits. And some of these metadata bits we're going to care about. So one of these metadata bits here, this is it writable? This is writable, meaning that if that bit is set to 0 and the user program tries to write, the processor should trigger an exception saying, no, they're not allowed to do that. And this next one, labeled US for user/supervisor, is it user accessible? So if that is set to 1, then it can be accessed from user mode. Otherwise, the processor will trigger an exception saying, hey, you told me not to allow the program to do this. There's some other bits there in XV6. We won't care about those. There's also the second possibility that if the valid bit, which, as I said, Intel calls present, is set to 0, then the processor ignores everything else in the page table entry. So this is for first level page tables. Second level page tables are similar, but we have the address. This is the physical page number of data. That's what Intel means by page frame. And we also have those same two metadata bits and a bit extra. And again, we have the two versions. We have the version where if it's valid, we have that valid, that present bit. If it's not valid, it's not present, and everything else is ignored by the processor. Questions on these formats? So something about this that might seem inconvenient is that I have to get my page number into a particular set of bits. That seems kind of annoying, like I'm going to compute my page number, then shift it around, then make sure I zero out everything else. But Intel's designers have conveniently designed this to make that actually very easy. So let's think of, if I have a physical page number and I get the address of the first byte of it, my pages are 2 to the 12 bytes. So I'm going to add a page offset 0, that is 12 bits. And it happens that these metadata after the page number are 12 bits. So if I just take the byte address, that the address of the first byte of my page, then I have the top of this page table entry set correctly, just because of how the bits line up. So if I get the address of the first byte, the top is set correctly, and I just need to set the bottom bits to include that present bit, whether it's writable, whether it's user accessible, and so on. So our strategy that we're going to use in C for constructing a page table entry is we're going to take that physical address and OR it with those extra bits we want to add on. We just need to make sure we get the physical address of the first byte of the page that we want to make the page table entry point to. Questions on why this works? And this is possible because Intel's designers made sure that this was possible because Shore is a lot more convenient for the OS to set up the page table entries this way. So this is how we'll see XP6 creating page table entries. And since we have to set these metadata bits a lot, XP6 defines constants for these in the header mmu.h. And XP6 names these constants based on how Intel names them. So it uses P for the present flag, which is the same as valid. We have W for writable, U for user, and a few others that, as I said, XP6 knows what they are, but it doesn't use them. We also sometimes need to take a page table entry and extract the physical page it points to. So XP6 has this macro, PTE adder, which takes the page table entry and removes those metadata bits. And that leaves the physical address of the first byte of the page. So that's how we extract that. And later on, if we wanted to actually access that, we could convert that to a kernel virtual address and like right there, for example. Okay, so questions? These macros. So putting this together, here's how we could add something to XP6 to output, say, a top level, a first level page table entry. So I'm saying I have a function here where I'm going to take a process and a virtual address the process might access, and I'm going to figure out what's the first level page table entry that accessing that virtual address will use. You know, what is it? So first I need to get a pointer to the top level page table, and that's stored in the process control block in this page dir field. Then I need to figure out how to index into that array. Remember, our page tables are just arrays of page table entries. I need to get the index, so I use this PDX macro, which just extracts the top 10 bits of the address. So it picks those top 10 bits. That's our index into that array. So we use that to read the appropriate page table entry. Remember, it's just an integer. And then I can decode it. So I figure out if it has the P, the present bit set, by ending with that constant. It has the writable bit set by ending with that constant. And I use that adder macro to extract the physical address of the first byte of the page it points to. Now, the page it points to, since this is a first level page table entry, is a second level page table. So that's the first byte as a physical address of the second level page table that we'll use to complete the lookup of the address that was supplied to this function. Questions about the procedure I used here? Okay. And We can use the same sort of code to set page table entry. So if we get a page table using the same kind of procedure and get the index by extracting the right bits of the address, we can then set at that index, you know, something where we say, here are the flags I want, here's the address, just OR them together, and that's going to be in the right format that the processor expects for a page table entry. Okay. And we're going to see that XV6 has functions that work in this sort of way. We'll look at them in a bit. So let's talk about some functions that XV6 has internally for manipulating pages and memory. So one thing we need that we haven't talked about is we need to allocate and deallocate memory. And for running a program, we need to load the program. Where do we load it? We need to make some physical pages for it. So XV6 inside the kernel has one allocation and deallocation function. So there's kalloc and kfree. Kalloc allocates one page. Doesn't do any other size. If you want it less than a page, too bad, you're getting a page. You want it more than a page, too bad, you can't do that. And there's kfree, which deallocates things allocated with kalloc. We'll talk about how kalloc is implemented later. It's actually pretty simple. There's walk page dir. So once we've allocated a page, we need to add it to a page table entry. And there's actually going to be a lot of cases where we need to look up what a page table entry is, either to set it or to figure out what it's currently set to. So there's this utility function walkPageDir, which gets a second level page table entry and gets a pointer to it. It also is what's going to handle allocating second level page tables as we need them. And we'll look at how does this utility function work. And based on this utility function, we're going to construct something to set a range of page table entries. So for example, when we're creating a new program, we need to create that one-to-one mapping. This function's going to do that for the kernel. When we create a new program, we need to load, we need to allocate memory. This is the function we're going to call to set up the page table for that new memory. And using this, we'll have our function that allocates new page tables, which is called allocKVM. And the function which takes a new page table and creates space for applications to run in it, which is going to be allocUVM. So let's look at this walkPageDir. That's this utility function we're going to use in XV6 all the time you want to get to a second level page table entry. And it's going to give us a pointer to that entry, so we can use that pointer to set it to something new. Like we're going to allocate memory there. We change the pointer now to point to an actual physical address. And this function takes a page table, a first level page table, as its first argument, page dir, a virtual address, so that we're going to do the lookup for, and this boolean. If it's 0, we're going to say, if there's no second level page table for this, just return an error. If it's 1, we're going to say, if there's no second level page table for this, make it, please. I want there to be one. So we take our page directory, we have a pointer to this first level page table, and our first step is going to be to use that, like an array, to access the index of the first level entry. And as we saw earlier, we have this macro pdx, which extracts the first 10 bits of the address. That's the index into that table. So we extract that page table entry and put it into this variable pde, a pointer to that. So it points to the page table entry in the first level we care about. And that page table entry, if it's present, is going to, marked as present, that is, it's valid, is going to point to our second level page table. If it isn't, we have to figure out what we do about that based on alloc. If alloc is 0, we're going to return an error. If it's 1, we're going to make one. So the first thing we do after we get that pointer is we check, is it valid or not? I'm going to start with the case where it is. So we already have a second level page table. How do we figure out what to do there? And intuitively, we're going to just use the second level page table like an array. But we have to extract the location of the second level page table from this page table entry we got for the first level. And this is the code for doing that. and it has a few pieces. So we have the obvious part, which is that we saw this adder macro. So we need to get the address from a page table entry. It has other stuff in it. We don't want that stuff. We just want the address. So that's it. But we get a physical address. And in the kernel, even though we're in the kernel, we still have virtual memory on. We don't access memory using physical addresses in our C code. We access them using virtual addresses. So you need to make that physical address into some virtual address we can use. I mentioned that the P2V macro is going to do that by giving us a virtual address in that blue region I showed you earlier, that kernel-only memory. And that finally gives us a pointer to the second-level page table that we can actually access from our C code. Then with that pointer, we get the, take the next 10 bits of the address, which is what the PTX macro returns, and access that element of the second level page table and return a pointer to it. So questions about what this function does, how it's written. Yeah?
Is the return value a physical address?
The question is the return value a physical address? No. And we know it's not a physical address. For, well, one reason we know it's not a physical address is because the convention I told you earlier, that we're always going to use pointers to represent virtual addresses, integers, physical, it's a pointer. Another reason we know is that we took a virtual address we got from here and accessed it like an array. We still have a virtual address after we do that. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So there's one case I haven't showed you, and that's what if we need to create a new second-level page table? So this function will do that if there isn't one already. So how does that work? So here's the more complete code, and here's our else case, where first thing we do is we say, are we allocating a second-level page table? So if we aren't, or if we are, then we try to allocate a page. Why a page? It happens that in x86, all page tables are one page. That's really convenient, and xv6 takes advantage of that. So we get our page with kalloc and assign it to page table, and kalloc might fail. We might be out of memory. If we're out of memory, or the person calling us said not to allocate us a page table, we just return null by returning 0. So assuming it worked, our first step is to clear out the page table. We're going to get some memory. It's not, we don't know what's going to be in it. We want to make sure that our new page table starts out as initially all invalid. So that's what this memset is for. It just sets everything in that to 0, which means that it's not present, which means that if a program tries to use something that maps to that page table, is nothing's going to happen yet. But we've allocated the page table, we need to make sure the first level page table points to it. So remember, PDE was our pointer to a first level page table entry. And we construct a page table entry that's valid now. So we do that by taking the physical address that we just allocated. Kalloc gives us a virtual address. We know it's virtual because we got a pointer. So we convert that to a physical address that the processor knows how to read in a page table entry. And we include some metadata to say this is a valid, that is present page table entry. And we say it's writable or user mode. So we definitely need the present. You might say, what if I don't want it to be writable? So xv6 does this deliberately. And the reason that it always sets it as writable in user mode is that if the second level page table entry says it's not writable, the second level page table entry takes precedence. So xv6 has made a choice that if you want to make something not writable or not user accessible, you always do it in the second level page table entry, never the first, even though the processor supports doing it in the first. So questions about our page table allocation? Okay, so that's allocating our page table entries. sorry, second level page tables, and also getting a pointer to second level page table entries. So map pages is the main function X36 uses to set page table entries, and it just uses that get a pointer to a second level page table entry function and sets the pointer it returns. So the map pages API says, give me the page table you want to set up and the range of virtual addresses specified as a start and a size, and the range of physical addresses you want to make that correspond to. And also, what permissions do you want to set? So here, we're not going to always make it writable. You can say writable by passing PTEW there, or say not by not passing that, for example. So what this does is we have a loop where for each virtual page in the range, we call walk page dir to get the second level page table entry for that virtual page. Then once we get that, we do this check. So there's this check here, which might seem a little weird. Why are we checking if it's valid? So XV6 has a policy, the way it's currently designed, that once we set a page table entry for a program, we never change it after that. If it's set to a valid value, it stays that way. We never change it from one valid thing to another. I'm mentioning this rather explicitly because there's an upcoming homework where this is no longer going to be true. But because it's true and XV6 has written, they have a debugging check here, because sometimes there might be bugs where they accidentally, you know, try to allocate something that's already allocated, and they don't want to do that. So once they figure out that it's not already allocated, they set the page table entry. And they mark it as that physical address that was passed in, and they have the permission bits that are passed in, and they also always make sure it's marked as valid, that is present. And they do this for every physical page in the range, so they advance to the next page, and so on. And they also advance the physical address. And you can think of the idea behind this function being that, you know, one case they want to handle is that one-to-one mapping from kern base to zero all the way up, is that that's mostly a small number of calls to this function to set that up. You just say, here's the range of physical addresses I want, just do it contiguously. And that's what it does. If you're looking carefully, you'll also see there's a little extra work at the top of this function to round things so we don't start in the middle of a page. Okay. Questions? This? Yeah.
Can you actually go back
to
the
side? Like to here? Why are we creating a first level if we're returning a second, is the question. For the second level page table entry to be useful, some first level page table entry better point to the page table it's in.
So is that assuming it doesn't happen?
So this is only done, yes, if there wasn't previously a first level page table entry that was valid.
Okay.
Other questions? Okay, so now we have our way of setting ranges of page table entries. And this is what we're going to use to actually set up a program's page table. And XV6 divides this work into two functions. So allocKVM is the function that actually creates the first level page table. And it also always, as the first thing we do, we set up the kernel part of that. And XV6 has just chosen that the kernel part of memory is the same in every single program. And that's done by just duplicating the data in every single program's page table. So allocKVM works by, does that. Maybe setupKVM. I think I might mean setupKVM. So when we're creating a page table in XV6, this is done by the exec system call. So our first step, I think it's setupKVM, is to create that new page table. Then we have to deal with, well, we actually want to run a program in this. You know, we can't just, you know, have it be have nothing for the program, so we need to allocate memory for the program. And there's a function for allocating memory for a program that XV6 uses called alloc_uvm. So set up KVM, the initial kernel mappings, we're just going to not say, I want physical address 0 through whatever. But for the user part, we have to actually choose new pages that we know other programs aren't using. So there, we're going to have a loop that calls kalloc. After we allocate the memory, as a separate step, we're going to copy from the executable into that newly allocated memory. And also, we have to allocate memory for things that aren't copied from the executable, like the stack and the heap. Let's talk about this first step. So the first step, we have to allocate memory for the page table. So we call kalloc once to get the first level page table. And then it's just a loop that calls map pages. Map pages calls walk pagedir. Walk pagedir is going to make second level page tables as needed. And this just sets up that mapping for that one-to-one mapping for the kernel for its that hot, top part of memory. And there's just a hard-coded list of what to do. For our second step, we have to allocate memory for the executable. To do this, we need to figure out, well, how big is the program supposed to be? What are we loading? So there's information in the executable for this. And in XV6, as with most operating systems these days, the executable contains a list of what we'll call program headers. And this says a range of virtual addresses and a range of stuff in the executable that should get loaded into those virtual addresses. So exec is going to find the program headers for the executable we're trying to start. And it's going to iterate through those headers and call alloc_uvm to allocate the range of virtual addresses. And it's going to call this function called load_uvm, which is going to copy from the executable at a specified location into that new virtual address. The program headers often also contain, and in XV6, in fact, do contain some permissions, like should, when this is loaded, should it be readable, should it be writable, should it be executable. So those are there for XV6, but XV6 doesn't use them. It just always makes everything readable, writable, and executable, just to keep things simpler. So let's look at this alloc_uvm function. So what this does is it takes a range of addresses. It's called old and new because the idea is that you start at 0 and you keep making the program bigger. So that's why they name things like this. So it takes an old size and a new size. And the idea is that they say old size was we had everything from 0 up to old size already allocated. So the first page I want to allocate is going to be the page after old size, which is why we round up. And we iterate until we get to new size, allocating whole pages. And where we allocate a page is we call mem, call kalloc to get this mem, a pointer to a new 0 page, and this is a pointer to a virtual address in the kernel. And then we set that to zeros with memset, so we make sure the program doesn't get any information it's not supposed to get. Then we call map pages to add it to the second level page table. And as you can see, we hard code that it's writable and user accessible. Questions? Got this. And this is the function which handles all the user memory allocations. So every time the user wants more memory, we always go through each page that we need to add to make that happen, call kalloc, set it to 0, and map it into the second level page table, and we're done. And when loading a program, we have a second step, which is to copy from the executable file into that new memory. Now, you might think, okay, we allocated memory at a particular address, so we copy load from disk into that new address, but it's not quite that simple. The actual procedure load_uvm uses is it looks up the physical address of the page by reading the page table entry with walk pagedir. Then it converts that physical address to a kernel address with p to v. And then it uses that kernel address to write. So why did we need to look up the virtual address with WalkPageDir just to write to a virtual address? Why couldn't we do it directly? Remember, this is happening during exec. So the problem is that we haven't switched to this new program yet. So our current page table doesn't have the same thing at that virtual address. And we're setting up a new page table that isn't active yet. So that's why we have to look it up. It's not active. We can't just access things using that page table, because it's not the current page table. We have to like manually look things up in it to use its mapping, because we haven't told the processor about it yet. The processor doesn't know we're doing this yet. We haven't switched to this program. So questions about LoadUVM? So this altogether is how we get the program running. There's a few extra steps of allocating additional memory for the stack and the initial heap, and also setting up that guard page. After that, that's loading a program and setting up its page table. Now, there's one step we kind of glossed over, and I said we have kalloc and kfree, and this is our memory allocation functions. And you might wonder, how do those work? How do we allocate pages? So kalloc and free, as I mentioned, they allocate whole pages only. And the way they work is they just keep a linked list of pages that are available. You might say, OK, so we have a linked list. How do I allocate memory for that linked list? So they use this neat trick that the linked list is stored in the free pages themselves. So each free page is a node in the linked list. There's your memory. And when it's not free anymore, well, you don't use it as a linked list anymore. And this linked list is created at boot. So at boot, the XP6 looks up how much memory there is, which is just a constant, actually, and sets everything that it didn't load into at boot as part of this linked list. So allocating is remove something from the linked list, return it. Deallocating is turn something into a linked list node, add it to the linked list. Questions about kalloc? Okay, so I showed you about allocating memory from the kernel, but we have to somehow make this turn into allocating memory for applications. And in XV6, there is a malloc function that you can use from XV6 applications, but the XV6 kernel doesn't provide that interface in system calls. So the malloc function that XV6 has is using a much simpler system call that handles expanding the heap. So XV6 keeps track of where the end of the heap is as this size variable in the process control block. So from 0 to the end of the heap, that's size. And you can adjust where that is with the SBRK for set break system call, the break being what's between the end of the heap and invalid memory. And this is how malloc works in XV6. So malloc calls set break and figures out what to do with that memory it just got by moving that boundary, making the heap bigger. So the SBREAK system call takes an amount, and basically it just increment size by that amount. You can also supply a negative amount, in which case it will make the heap smaller. So we can look at the implementation of SBREAK. So here it is. So SBREAK reads its argument as the first argument, the one with index 0. It reads the old end of the heap and calls this growproc function and returns where the heap used to end. So you can call sbreak with a size of 0 to figure out where's the end of the heap right now. So this growproc function is where all the work is being done. And we've already seen the function that GroPROC is going to use to do its actual work, and that's this alloc UVM function, which, remember, was a loop that just allocated a page with kalloc, called map pages to add it to the program's page table. You notice we also have a case where we deallocate memory. Dealloc UVM basically does the inverse of alloc UVM, freeing pages one at a time and deallocating them. So questions? This. So for malloc to work on top of this interface, you know, it has to actually do a bunch of stuff to track the memory more precisely. And so we have a bunch of layers of abstraction between our malloc, like 16 bytes, and how the kernel actually adds memory. And notably, like, the kernel can only allocate a page at a time. And that's just, but that's why we have this abstraction, because we just don't have a way of giving a program 16 bytes at a time, even though that's often what we want. Okay, so talked about setting up memory for programs, setting up page tables. Now we're going to look at sort of another issue, which is about page faults. So when we have a page table and it's not all valid, and a program tries to access something that's not allocated to it, triggers a page fault. And if you look at XV6, it looks like XV6 doesn't do anything about page fault. And because if you have a page fault, it goes to the default case in the trap function. So let's look at an example of this. So here is my user program. So I have an XV6 program where I do this memory access. So I take 800444, cast it to a pointer, and dereference it, try to set it to 1. That's not going to work because my program probably doesn't have that memory location allocated unless I've expanded my heap by a lot. So it's going to cause a page fault. It's going to cause a page fault because we haven't set up a present page table entry at that address. And in XV6, that page fault is going to go to this code in trap.c in the default case, which prints out this message, then kills the program that triggered the page fault. And there's actually some useful information here. So one piece of information that's in here is that even though XV6 doesn't recognize it, the processor has told us that this is a page fault, that there's a trap no, and 14 is the number that Intel assigned to page faults, and XV6 even defines a constant for it. It just doesn't do anything with it. So it says trap 14, that's a page fault. We also have the address that I actually used in my program. It appears in this message. That's really convenient. We can actually figure out where was the program trying to access that didn't work. We don't have to look at the instruction. It's given to us. And we got it from this thing, function rcr2. And this is a wrapper around an assembly function that reads the special register CR2 for control register 2, another horrible name by Intel, which contains, among other things, the address that triggered a page fault. We also have some other useful information, like here's the address where the instruction that triggered the page fault is, and so on. But you might say, oh, we have this address. We could use that to give a better error message, to help a debugger, but maybe there's something more useful we can do with that. There's a possibility that instead of just printing out an error and killing the program, we could do something more intelligent to handle the page faults. So, and this is something that we're going to talk a lot about ways of doing. So instead of just saying, crash the program, sorry, I didn't give you that memory, we could say, well, I know I didn't give you that memory before, but you should have it. And we could fix the page table. And when the processor triggers a page fault, it doesn't do the instruction that triggered the page fault, just saves things before, so we can return from the page fault, and it's going to retry that instruction. And if we update the page table, that's going to work. So we can use this as a sort of alternative to setting up a program's memory in advance. So rather than saying, I'm going to set up all the memory before the program runs, I can say, I'm going to set up some of the memory before the program runs, but when the program uses some memory I haven't set up, I'll fix it then, just in time, fix the program's memory, and the program won't notice, because we'll just redo that instruction, it will work the second time, everything will be great. So the way we do this in XV6 would look something like this, that we detect, okay, I got a page fault. You know, the processor told me this is a page fault. Let's figure out what address the processor thinks is being accessed. And I can look at that address and make some decision about what was that address being used for. I can decide, is that program actually trying to do something I think is wrong? And this ability lets me have a disconnect between what's in the page table and my logical notion of the program's memory. So XV6 generally doesn't do this. XV6's decision is the page table is the memory that's assigned to the program, that's it. But many real operating systems say, the page table is what the hardware knows about. I know about more things about what memory the program's assigned, and I'm going to handle that disconnect by fixing up what the hardware knows about in the page fault handler. So in that case, we'll say, okay, I told the hardware this wasn't okay, but I know what should happen here, and I'm going to fix the page table entry, go back to the hardware. The hardware is going to rerun this access, and it's going to work this time. The program's going to keep moving, and that's fine. If I decide, oh no, I told the hardware it was invalid, and it's really invalid, I can go on and do my usual kill the program thing instead. So questions about this idea? This idea that, you know, we don't have to set up the page table entry in advance. We can wait for the hardware to tell us something was wrong, fix it then. So this allows us to do all sorts of what I'll call page table tricks. There's all sorts of cool OS features that we can implement by, you know, having what's really in the program's memory not be what the program thinks it has in its memory, and fixing the disagreement with a page fault handler, using that to actually make things work. And one good use case for this comes up with stack allocations. So let's say I have a stack here, and you know, I have this typical layout that we see in Linux. There must be a question of like how big should the stack be? So XV6 has chosen stacks are 4 kilobytes. And you might complain, well, you know, sometimes I use lots of recursion, and I'd like those programs to run. And if you want to handle programs that like do real deep recursion, you might say, well, the stack really should be like 4 meg. But then you decide, well, I want to run 1,000 programs at once, and if each of them have a 4 meg stack, well, that seems bad. You're using 4 gig to run these programs, which probably are not using 4 meg of stack space. You're running 1,000 of them. And your observation is that most of these programs are like maybe using like a couple pages of their stack space, 10K maybe. But you'd really like to make it them have many megabytes just in case you're running that deep recursion program. Like you could imagine a solution where like you ask people to tell you, this is my program that does deep recursion, but that's inconvenient. So how can we deal with this? Well, what we'd really like to do is we'd like to not allocate all this blue space, all this extra stack space that most programs don't need, unless the program tries to use it. And we can use this trick of changing the page table on a page fault to do that. We can say, only allocate the space if needed. So the way this might look is, you know, here I have a program that's about to run out of stack space that's allocated. So it has a stack pointer at the beginning of this page 7FFFC that is allocated. And when it decrements its stack pointer to push something onto the stack, it's going to go into page 7FFFB, which is invalid. So when this push instruction tries to run, that triggers a page fault, because the processor looks at the page table and says, that's not OK. But what we can have happen is the OS can separately track, oh, yeah, I didn't set up that page table entry, but I know that's where I want to put the program stack, so it's fine. And the OS in the page fault handler can say, since that's fine, there we go. There's a page for the stack, and return from the page fault handler, and the processor will retry the instruction that triggered the page fault. And this time it will work. And the program will run on as usual. And as far as the program's concerned, it behaves just as if the memory was allocated in advance. The only difference is that it experienced the performance penalty of getting the memory allocated a little later than when it booted, when it started. Okay. So questions about this idea here? Yeah.
Is there some amount of default space that's being allocated first, or is it just?
So the question is there some amount of default space that's being allocated first? So this is an OS-dependent decision. So, but it is common for OSs to allocate almost everything not by default. But it depends because there is a performance trade-off. Other questions? So I showed you allocate on demand for stack space. Allocate on demand is used for a lot of things. So it's often used for heap allocations. The idea is if a program asks for an extra meg of heap, probably not using the whole meg right away. So I can be faster by just returning. And if the program takes a couple seconds to use the whole meg, I can set up that megabyte in the background. We also can use it for loading programs. That if I'm loading a multi-megabyte executable, well, probably the program doesn't need most of those megabytes to start running. So I can start running the program with just the stuff it needs to start running and load the rest as the program runs. So this is used all over the place to speed things up. And we're going to have a future assignment where you're going to add this type of feature, this allocation on demand. But to keep things simple, we're not going to have you load things from disk on demand. We're just going to have you allocate heap space in XV6 on demand. So you're going to implement that page fault handler. And you're going to say, is this part of the program's heap? If so, OK, we should allocate it. Yes? Paging and protection. That's what assignment, yeah. Okay, so let's look at, skip the exercise for now. Okay, So another thing we can do with page tables is we can now efficiently implement fork. So a problem you may have had with fork is that it creates a copy of all the program's memory, and that seemed really expensive. So the way we're not going to make this really expensive is we're going to observe that we have a better option than that. And a way of thinking about this is that there's some stuff we definitely don't need to copy. So if we think of bash, bash forks, bash has some code and constants. And these we don't need to write, so we can just share them, right? We could copy the memory, but the program's not going to tell the difference if we share it and just make sure the program never writes to it. So that works for the code and constants, but it doesn't quite work for the other memory because, well, what if the program writes to it? But we can take a compromise. We can't share this writable data all the time, but we can share it as long as the program hasn't written yet. And we can tell if the program writes by marking it as read-only in the page table. Then if the program writes, it triggers a page fault. Now, our default behavior would have been the program tried to write to read-only memory, kill it. But we don't have to do that. We can instead do that same, is the address OK? We can say, OK, you tried to write to this thing that was read-only. That must be why this page fault happened. But oh, I remember. I told the processor it was read-only. But really, I thought, I just wanted to copy it later. So it triggers a fault when it's written. And when that fault happens, we can do the copy then. We can make sure the program is allowed to write. But before it writes, we set up it to write into a fresh copy so it doesn't interfere with the other program using the same memory. So the way this might look is here we have our program's memory before forking. And to implement fork, rather than copying all these physical pages to new physical pages, which is sort of the simplest thing to do, we're just going to mark everything as read-only and have them point to the same place. Now we have two processes that share all their memory, but they share it read-only. So if one writes to a global variable, well, that's going to trigger a page fault. So we don't have to worry about them interfering with each other. But what we're going to do instead of crashing the program when it tries to write something read-only is that when the program, say, tries to write to a global variable in this page, that's going to trigger a page fault. And we're going to say, OK, yeah, you're allowed to write to stuff there, but I don't want you to write, you know, this program to write to the stuff that this program's going to read. So I'm going to fix up your page table entry to point somewhere else. And when I do that, I'm going to copy the data just like I would have if I copied everything on fork, but I'm only copying one page. And I can do this page by page as the program writes. And the overall result is that I only end up writing and copying as much as the program actually uses. And remember, when we use fork, most commonly we like changed a few things and then exact. So we're not writing very much, even if we have a pretty big program. So questions on copy on write? Okay, so let's go to here. So let's talk about allocate on demand. So here I have some code where I allocate an array on the stack. And then I write to several entries of the array. And to keep things simple, let's say that the array is located at the beginning of a page. And not initialized by the compiler. So my question is, you know, if the stack is allocated on demand and only when we actually access it, how much space is actually allocated for the array? So I'm assuming that, you know, the compiler doesn't initialize it, so it's only the accesses we do that are going to trigger memory allocations. I'm saying that's the beginning of a page, so you don't have to worry about what if half of the array is on one page and some other data is on that page. I'll give you a minute or two. Check with your neighbor. Who would like some more time? Okay, let's see. So who thinks A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I. Okay, so we have a plurality, or a majority, probably think F, and we have some other answers. So of D, like at least we're all doing more than a page, which is good. So the key thing to remember, which is often not intuitive, is that even though we're only writing a byte at a time, the only mechanism the OS has to give the program memory gives a whole page. So the OS can't allocate less than a page to the program because that's all the hardware knows about. Hardware doesn't know about one byte. It knows about here's a page the program has or here's a page the program doesn't have. And we're accessing these indexes into the array. And when we access index 0, since we know the array starts at the beginning of a page, that page is indexes 0, 1, 2, up to 4k. So when we allocate the page to make index 0 work, we have to allocate 0 through 4k. We allocate the page to make index 16k work. We have to allocate 16k through 20k, and so on. So we have these eight locations at which we're allocating 4k each. So we have 8 times 4k, or 32k. And because these locations are far enough apart that none of them are on the same page, you know, these are all independent allocations. We don't get any benefit from allocating one. Doesn't help us with the next one. So questions about that reasoning? Okay. So one final exercise. So let's say I have a program with this memory layout with 4K pages. So note the way 4K pages works. This is one page. This is two pages. This is one page. This is two pages. We'll not care about that. And this is one page. And the question is, program calls fork, does these modifications, how many physical pages do we expect to be allocated afterwards? Assuming everything accessible has a physical page, like nothing's waiting to be loaded from disk or anything like that. And as a first step, you should figure out how much is it using before forking. Can someone tell me how much it is before forking, how much we have allocated? Or how we would figure that out? Anyone? Okay, don't worry, I'm on time, so I'm going to. So before forking, we have to have pages allocated for the code and for the global variables, for the heap, and for the stack. Everything the program can read and write, if it has physical pages allocated, you know, that has to be available, assuming like we aren't allocating that stuff on demand, which, given the question, is what we're going to care about, right? We say without a fault, so has to already be allocated. So before we would need 2 plus 1 plus 2, 5, so 5, 6 pages. And then the child needs its own copy of the heap, of part of the heap, and part of the stack. So after we need plus 2 at least, one for the heap, one for the stack. And this is pages. And we could need as much as plus 3, because what if this crosses pages? Crosses a page boundary. So the heap array might be at the edge of the page, so it might be in two pages, in which case we have to copy both of the pages, even though we're not using most of it. So questions on that? So key thing to note is that we have to copy the whole page because that's all the processor can deal with the page tables. Okay, so that's where I'm going to finish up today. Next week is our midterm. So on Tuesday, I will be doing midterm review. If you don't have questions for me to answer, it will be a very short class.